The beginning of our 5 to 7 years together has led me to contemplate ministry. What, after all, do ministers do? Or what are they, including myself, trying to do? For me, this whole subject is conscience-stirring. It forces me to think about what people like Chadbourne Spring, Leon Hopper, Joan Montagna, and other ministers, including me, are supposedly up to. And to consider the standards, Isaiah, Theodore Parker, Olympia Brown, by which our craft is and always should be measured. Old-timers, and I'm getting to be one myself, I guess, but old-timers say or told me when I was wet behind the ears that one should preach on ministry at least twice a year. As your developmental minister, I'm trying to foster a conversation that asks many questions, none less central than what is ministry. So I will preach on that question repeatedly. But I must tell you at the start, I always find writing and delivering such sermons incredibly difficult, mostly because ministry, as I understand it, is an almost impossible job. It is, after all, the second oldest profession. And there are ways, I'm convinced, that not only that prostitutes minister to the needs of their clients, but the ministers sadly prostitute themselves. One of the great teachers that I had, one of my great mentors, was in my first church solo. It was in Danbury, Connecticut, and the rabbi emeritus of the United Jewish Center Reformed Synagogue in that town, Rabbi Jerome Molino, took me under his wing, and you'll hear about Rabbi Molino from time to time. But in that first luncheon together, he said to me, looking me sternly in the eye, "If you're not almost losing your job, Steve, then you're not really doing it." That there's a need to challenge our members, challenge the greater community, and challenge mostly ourselves to be the best we can be. Now, this often leads to problems. There's this young seminary graduate, the story is told, who preached his first sermon on following the teachings of Jesus and was very well received. Then the second week came around and he preached following the same sermon, and word for word. And, you know, the member said, "Well, you know, he's moving in, he's a lot going on, he probably didn't have time to write it." That's okay, it was a pretty good sermon. Well, then the third weekend, he does the same again. And at this point, the board of trustees is kind of upset, and they caucus, but they say, "Well, one more." Fourth week, he starts, and the president comes right up and says, Reverend, this is unacceptable. You're supposed to write a new sermon each week." He said, "Well, but you've yet to follow the first one." And sometimes ministers want their members to follow, and it's hard to get them to. Theodore Parker, who we eulogize and hold up as one of our greats, preached on abolition something like 75 times in a row. And this annoyed many of his members. But he would not get off that dime because he considered it, as most of us today would agree, the most critical issue facing the country at that time and facing all of his members. Likewise, William Ellery Channing, another Unitarian luminary, his anti-slavery sermons irritated his largest contributors, and he was at Federal Street Church, very fancy church, and many of his largest contributors made their fortunes in the shipping and textile industries, and they did not really like hearing abolition. The problem, as I see it, there are several implicit contradictions woven right into the fabric of ministry. Success in the ministry, it seems to me, is the art and practice of turning these contradictions into creative contrasts. It's like the plus and minus of electricity, teamwork and competition within a company or work team, or the sometimes lead, sometimes follow involved in marriages and other significant relationships. The art of turning it into a dance, creative contrast, instead of a brawl. Well, how does one do that? How to avoid the pitfalls and turn the interactive relationship we call parish ministry into a dance? The first step, it seems to me, is to recognize and identify some of the implicit contradictions whereby we are less likely to be trapped in them unconsciously. The first potential contradiction grows out of the various roles ministers are asked to assume. Get clear with me, with yourself. Get clear on what you're looking for, and then express it to me, to my eventual successor, but mostly to yourselves. Do you want me, do you want your next settled minister to be a prophet, a scholar, a comforter, a friend, a toastmaster, an administrator, a PR man, a hipster, or an old salt? Probably, if you're like just about every other church, you want all of these things. Well, good luck. Since that is impossible, just be attentive to when your minister is wearing which hat, and talk to him or her, talk to me, about what hat you want the minister to wear today. Take, as just one example, the prophet role. Churches say they want to be challenged, to be inspired and motivated to new heights, new levels of social action and personal growth. But the truth is that most of the time we don't want to be challenged all that much. We want to be patted on the back. We want the minister's spiritual blessing on our all-too-conventional lifestyles and social complacency. We want to be affirmed and supported in our social and psychological ruts. Now, that's okay. It's really all right. But many of us tend to think in terms of the 60s civil rights and anti-war movements and to forget that, by and large, the church, along with the university, is a great supporter, a bulwark, really, a foundation of the status quo. And the Unitarian Universalist Church is not that much of an exception. Even in the 60s, most churches were conservative, and most UU churches were fairly staid. Churches, even Unitarian Universalist congregations, are essentially conservative organizations. In the late 40s and early 50s, when A. Powell Davies of All Souls Unitarian Church in Washington, D.C., was preaching to four members of the Supreme Court every Sunday, he was not preaching revolution. And ministers or professors who do, like Jesus and Socrates, tend to get in hot water, to say the least. Consider, many of the denominational heroes we celebrate today had, when they were working, one heck of a time. Ralph Waldo Emerson resigned from the ministry under pressure. Olympia Brown was forced out of her pulpit in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And Theodore Parker was shunned for years by nearly all of his colleagues. Keep in mind, religion is an irritant, not a solve. The prophetic message, whether East or West, activist or mystical, from Jeremiah Wright to Theodore Parker to Sister Simone Campbell, the nun on the bus, who was the WARE lecturer 4 years ago at General Assembly, the prophetic message puts the lie to complacency. And what's funny about this, a contradiction, is that at the same time religion is an irritant, the minister is called upon to be a healer and physician, to balm our weary souls and help us go forth and carry on. Say something spiritual, congregants are forever asking of me. Remind me of the grace that abounds. Give me a glimpse of infinity. But don't run over 20 minutes. Almost more than members want to be challenged, they want to be touched, to be reminded of the beauty all around them, of the meaning, the deep meaning, in our families, in our capacity to take pride in good work, to be inspired and fortified, to keep at it, to keep on keeping on, as Marvin Gaye once put it, for another week. And most of all, we want to feel, for a moment, our souls, the rush of discovery, of awe, amazement, or wonder, the rekindling of affection and a sense of thankfulness or gratitude. One learns over time how to do these things, but it is never easy. The key, I think I've learned, is humility. There's a lot of beauty and wonder and meaning in the world, but one has to get off their high horse before she or he can ever see it. As the Unitarian Henry David Thoreau wrote in Walden, humility, like darkness, reveals great lights. And here we come upon another contradiction woven into the fabric of ministry. By helping us come back to our senses, people can begin thinking that the minister herself or himself is someone special. We may be good at what we do, and a lot of us are, actually, but it's not really how brilliant or hardworking or creative the minister is. It's about our ability to share with lay members of the church our thoughts and feelings, and even more, to hear the same from them, to be in full-hearted and open-minded dialogue. At the core of our Unitarian Universalist tradition is the idea, the mythic idea, really, of covenant, like the unison affirmation you repeat every Sunday at the end of the order of service, where you covenant together to be loving with one another and truth-seeking and of service. Covenants affirm our commitment to be in an ongoing conversation with one another, to search together for the sacred and the really real. The minister, in our tradition, is not supposed to tell congregants how to think or how to feel, but to challenge and encourage them to think and to feel. Covenant is based on dialectic, truth-seeking, as opposed to aoristics, which is debate, same root as error. Ideally, this is what most of our congregational efforts are about, truth-seeking. Too many of our day-to-day conversations are, unfortunately, aoristic. And we know when we're in an aoristic conversation, whenever we find ourselves framing an answer while our interlocutor is still talking. Dialectic, on the other hand, as our guest preacher Joseph Bednarik reminded us last week, happens, a la Socrates, whenever we admit to our uncertainty and go searching for truth together. Unitarian Universalism can sometimes be like my 10th grade biology class, which I remember with trepidation. Whenever one of us asked Mr. Chadbourne a question, instead of simply answering, he'd ask, "How would you devise an experiment to figure that out?" His method could be wearisome, but he taught us how to think and how to feel, and especially how to learn. As Mr. Bednarik also reminded us last Sunday, unlike Orthodox congregations at UU churches, here all your answers are questioned. Well, okay then, so there are no answers. Still, one should be able to expect, even if the world itself is never ceasing open-ended flux, at least we can expect our minister to be solid and dependable, someone we can count on, always knowing where she or he stands. And yet here it is where we come upon another contradiction, perhaps the most difficult one to get beyond, that is to transcend and turn from a contradiction into a creative contrast. For if the world, as modern physicists tell us, is in constantly transforming open-ended flux, then we too, if we are to be truly integral and whole in the world, must recognize ourselves as being in flux too. And yet the world of social institutions and organizations finds this almost impossible to accept. The open, changing person is threatening, at least to many. We want to know what we can expect from our leaders, not always have to be responding to something new. It was when Jesus did not play to the expectations of his followers that they allowed him to be killed. And in just the same way, political and academic mavericks tend to be platooned or marginalized, while dependable, that is, predictable people, the kind that take a position and do not change it for 40 years, go far. Like Jesse Helms or B.F. Skinner, they develop a whole political faction or philosophical school behind them. The rub, the contradiction, is that this whole dependably consistent thing is essentially ego or mask, which is precisely the problem. To grow spiritually and psychologically and together as a community, we have to learn how and become open enough to take off our masks. And yet too often the whole religious enterprise is set up to keep our masks on. I often lament that longtime church members will suddenly go through a crisis, a divorce, loss of a job, a disabling or disfiguring illness, and when they most need a loving and non-judgmental support community, stop coming to church out of embarrassment or shame at the very time they are most in need and could most benefit. But if members have difficulty taking off their masks, how more threatening it is for the minister. How much easier it is to stay hidden behind the pulpit, formally garbed in this clerical robe. Make no mistake about all ministers, your next minister following me as well as all the rest, are only human. We can only lead with our strengths and our weaknesses. Our faith, Unitarian Universalism, is centered upon two great heresies. First, the Unitarian heresy, that all is one, totally interconnected. One, not three or four, and internally connected. And second, universalism, that we are all saved the way we are. The gig is up. Just accept it, and accept yourself, and accept each other with all our foibles. Thus we can be open and honest with each other. We don't have to wear masks at all. This is nothing to be embarrassed or afraid of. Indeed, it is our greatest asset and our profoundest truth. Here, in this beautiful historic sanctuary, this place of art and music and self-discovery, and foremost of search, here among friends or soon-to-be friends. Here, we can come off our high horses, take off our masks, offer one another our hands and hearts, and enter into the dialectic of beloved community. For in reality, true ministry is a relationship between an open, loving congregation and a learning, growing, learning to love pastor. Any vital ministry emerges between a congregation and its minister, or it doesn't. I've been in the professional ministry for 35, 38 years, kind of depends how you count, come December 2nd. I've come to know a lot of ministers. Across the board, whatever their style, their theology, their gender or orientation, we Unitarian Universalists have a remarkably talented and able group of women and men out there in the ministry. Some of my colleagues have truly great capacities, and though I haven't known any of them, I'd be inclined to include your former ministers, Barbara Wells, Peter Luton, and the rest in their number. Committed and loving human beings doing their very best. But none of us is perfect or without flaw. Certainly I am not. Any more than anyone. So please, don't look to me for perfection. Look to me for a relationship. A relationship nurtured by mutual humility and openness to change, and by openness to each other's weaknesses as well as our strengths, so that we can grow together in the art and practice of ministry. This is my prayer. Amen. Shalom. Namaste.